Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hi.
And Brian Brushwood.
The technically inept Brian Brushwood. Apologies to everyone not watching us or listening to us live on Alpha Geek Radio right now.
Gentlemen, let's move past that now. Brian, I sent you an email. I need you to open up this email, and there's a video I want you to play.
All right, you got it.
Very, very concerned. I have several animal attack stories today to share with you, but also sometimes when you watch Breaking Bad, Saul, the character, was such a gift. Out of nowhere, we get this wonderful character. When you watch Lost, out of nowhere, this enemy, this guy from Henry Gale, becomes this incredibly fascinating personality that drives so much of the story and becomes pretty much the centerpiece of that and goes on to become a lead in his own shows. Hannibal Lecter, you know, is a side character in Red Dragon and then becomes the focus of that series. You get these really, really awesome things. And gentlemen, I want you to watch the story. It's about an owl attacking people.
This is the park, Bush Park, in the middle of downtown Salem, where the owl attacks have occurred. And tonight, we managed to find the owl.
All of a sudden, my cap was sucked off like a vortex. And it was like a tearing, shearing sensation when he latched onto my head.
Salem doctor Ron Jakes tells me he thought he was having a stroke or an aneurysm when the owl.
All right,
finally...
real quick for the audio listeners.
Go ahead and imagine what you would see on screen when someone said Dr. Ron Jakes. Because I think what you might think is a man in a very finely tailored suit, somebody in scrubs maybe, with a face mask pulled down to his chin. Brian, can you explain what we're seeing on this?
Let's start with that image, and then whoever is in a white coat, but now we're going to swap out whatever face you thought you saw in there. Let's put Nicolas Cage in there. Doug Henning hair. And let's
Doug Henning were alive today and had a receding hairline.
That's correct. Let's throw some earrings on him. Let's throw some Big Lebowski-esque stars made of gold in his blazer, his white blazer, and throw him in what looks like a wrestling getup underneath. Like he's wearing spandex.
I mean, he very much has a gold lamé jumpsuit.
Yes, very much so. And
so. So two things about this. When they said this, the first part, I'm like, forget the – that's an amazing story. When you saw – I saw this image. If they didn't tell you what his profession, what would you think this guy was?
Oh, dude, he's a magician. Are you kidding me? He's either that or a Vegas singer.
So I'm like, this guy like – and then they say doctor. I'm like, doctor of what? Turns out he's a highly respected surgeon.
That is amazing.
And a magician.
Oh, wait, he is a magician.
He is a magician. Because I'm like this guy fell in love with Doug Henning when he was a teenager and never gave that up and became a surgeon. I looked him up, and he's actually a very amazing guy. And that was the Boing Boing. They pointed to the article, and they say, you know, they talked about maybe this owl really hates Doug Henning.
Yeah, there it is.
So never judge a book.
I want to see why he's relevant.
Swoop down onto his head. Not just once, but twice.
Electrical light shock and a really sharp object on the top of my head, like I'd been hit by 30 pounds of force.
The barred owl attacked Jakes while he was jogging in Bush Park.
Really, I very much am jealous of our audio listeners right now because they are hearing something entirely normal. Like every – his tone of voice, his meter, like his – very even-handed and
he's got that doctor talk. Yeah, he's got that surgeon doctor talk, that dispassionate clinical way of evaluating exactly what it was he went through.
Now, I'm sending you the results of a Google image search. This guy may be our new hero. This guy may be our new mascot.
By the way, he looks like he should be drawing caricatures on the Las Vegas Strip. Like that. This is the kind of dude that he looks like. Is he would be trying to sell you a picture of drawing your niece for $30.
Dr. Ron Jakes can do no wrong. There's literally nothing he doesn't look good in. We see him dressed as, looks like, are these Green Bay Packers superhero clothes he's wearing?
Yeah, that looks like, yeah, he is some sort of Packers superhero. He's got a cape. His long flowing locks are really the big key there. He also seems to be fond of blouses.
Wait, it definitely looks like he's wearing a corset here.
Wearing a bustier with like some real nut huggers along with some red, looking fairly expensive, like Ferragamo platform shoes.
Okay, so this is as reported by the Daily Mail in the UK. It says jogger thought he was struck in the head by lightning, but was actually attacked by an owl. And then they obviously Googled his name and they found these fantastic photos of him dressed as a superhero and an owl, and then they showed him in a Wonder Woman style bustier. That's amazing.
But wearing man briefs, guys. He's still wearing man briefs.
Oh no, they're definitely no. They are nut huggers. Yeah.
Ah, dude, I wish I was half the man this guy was.
I was like, man, this is fascinating. So I looked him up, and like he's got fantastic reviews. He's a bariatric surgeon. He's a highly regarded surgeon. What an amazing. We should all fulfill our potential in that way and feel that willing to be who we are.
We yeah, absolutely, man. Hats off to you, Dr. Jakes.
I mean, because also, doctor as a profession is not without its attention to aesthetics, right? Like there's a reason why even as surgeons and as people who make a living with a lot of money and a reputation for doing their job well, a lot of doctors dress the same, you know, like they have similar interest. This guy is certainly a cut beyond. He's got to be 10 times the doctor he would otherwise be able to be as eccentric as he is and have people still put their bodies in his hands, right?
Oh, dude, absolutely. Are you kidding me? Like, I would trust him with my, what is bariatric surgery?
Yeah, you know, tummy, you want to lose some weight, you know? Hmm. Like,
right on. Well, then, yeah, I'd trust him. I mean, he looks great.
That makes a little bit more sense.
What's that?
Yeah.
Plastic surgeon makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we started off with a story. I'm like, this owl that's attacking people. I mean, it's awesome. It's pretty amazing. I was just in Oregon. I guess I should have investigated that, but maybe I wanted to go meet Dr. Jakes. So I'm going to go on a crash course of just nothing but chocolate and Skittles and go in there as a patient to get under his confidence, find out the real guy.
Hey, what? There's one thing that is without a doubt. Dr. Jakes knows how to party. You find yourself out at 2 in the morning with Dr. Jakes, you are having a night you will never forget.
I just, as soon as I saw that image, I'm like, he's got to be a magician. He's got to be a magician. Only a magician would dress that way. Look up, magician.
Only magicians have access to the secret clothiers who make those things available.
Yeah, and I'm like, doctor, what's he a doctor of, like, naturopathic, some sort of wacky Chinese herbal doesn't really work thing? Nope. Sturgeon, the realest real doctor you can get.
That's awesome. But
also, if he is a magician, I have a concept that I think is true, that magic is 30 people wide and everybody knows everybody. There is no doubt that Dr. Jakes likely knows at least one of you two, if not the both of you.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think about that.
You know, I often, when I encounter some personalities, I'll look up my search. I'll search through my all of my, like, you know, whoever's like
ordered to see if you've ever run across them.
And I've had that where I've had people, oh, somebody ordered this for me like 8 years ago or whatever. I'm like, ah, interesting.
How's it spelled?
J-A-E-K-S.
All right. Nope. Yeah, I don't.
J-A-E-K-E-S, maybe.
Oh, well, here, I think you just sent it to me. Yeah, J-A-E-C-K-S. This is, welcome to Brian and Andrew's Search Their Emails.
That's not a common name to mine.
You know what? I do have some Facebook messages from somebody named Colin Jakes. He says that he's my biggest fan. If I would, please reply.
I mean, listen. You have to face facts, Brian, that there is a fairly high likelihood. And go ahead, bring up a picture of Dr. Jakes.
Dr. Ron.
In one of his outfits.
Sure.
That man wrote you or commented online that you shouldn't have spoiled the invisible deck.
Oh. I believe he's one of the good guys. I think he looks like a progressive free thinker who's, you know, aware that we live in an age where nobody's going to go to the library.
So, all right, that guy right there was writing, well, I for one stand with Brian Brushwood.
Yeah, I would like to think that.
This vortex of hate.
Yeah. Amazing. No, Dr. Ron Jakes, you're the real MVP this week.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, do we want to do a shout out for Patreon before we move on to our next thing?
And yeah, we should, especially as we're at the beginning of March, and it's this weird recalibration time at the beginning of the month is when everyone, you know, all their promises come due and they get charged for all the various Patreons that they're supporting. And it's amazing. My favorite people are the ones who actually tweet out. They screen capture the fact that they got charged and they thank and talk about how excited they are at their support. Thank you to all of you guys. We are 2/3 of our way to a goal of hitting 1,000 per episode, so we can continue to fund our producer and continue to expand with projects. And we hope you guys have enjoyed it. Thank you to the 419 people who are keeping us regular. You're the Metamucil to our weird colons.
And those of you that are not in there yet, here's the thing: those we do this other podcast after things now, which became possible because of this. So. When you it's out there for everybody, but when you're a Patreon, you get the notification when that comes up. And, you know, that's the thing that's been interesting. We're getting as much or more emails now about after things as we're getting about weird things.
Oh, dude, we've doubled the content. And it's deep, man. It's inside stuff. Like, you know, we're able to talk about the nature of creation and our, how we got started. We're answering questions now, which is my favorite thing. Do we have questions going into after things this week?
Maybe we will by the end of this.
All right.
By the way, I think I registered afterthings.com or something like that. No, I don't think I got that. Let me see. I know that's wrong time for me to be looking at that. So anyhow, I did not. I was trying to get something else. But anyhow, my point is, gentlemen, thank you for everybody supporting us. And yeah, just thank you for listening. Just share the words. If you're not able to support, don't want to support, that's fine. If you like it, just tell people you like it.
Yeah.
We appreciate it. Anyhow, gentlemen, part of why we're doing this, and we're still, we want to do our open ROV project. We haven't abandoned the robotic sub thing. We're just trying to figure out the best strategy on that one because we do want to assemble our fleet. But,
hey, but before you do the weird things, like are we legally obligated to give a little tip of the hat to the whole dress controversy? Can we agree that that was one of the weirdest things of the entire week?
Yeah, let's we'll do that now instead later. I love so everybody if you don't know, there was the whole thing this week, right after the net neutrality, we all get to argue over the color of a dress. I loved this. I loved that a perceptual illusion was the thing everybody talked about to the point of driving everybody nuts, because now we have a reference point. We have a reference point about perception, about context and everything. It's in the books. It's one of those things that for years to come, we can all say, remember the day,
Yeah. Well, of all of the analyses that I saw going around, I was like, I couldn't make it be the right color and the best explanation.
Oh, you're a white gold guy?
Well, dude, it was so clearly white gold, and I couldn't make it anything but that. And then the best link came from one of the friends that you met at the SpaceX aborted launch, Emily Calandrelli, MCal Space Gal on Twitter, says that she found this New York Times interactive thing that breaks down where they actually take an aggregate of the colors, and then they show it. I guess the illusion is based on whether or not you use the contextual clues of the blown-out lighting in the background to see it as a very brightly washed out black and blue dress versus a, if it's in shadow, then it clearly has to be a white and gold one. And then when they put the three side by side, all of a sudden I got it for the first time. And I was like, all right, I see now.
Justin, where were you on this issue?
I guess I saw it as more white and gold than I did blue and black, but it took me a while to even understand what the controversy was because I had seen so many color corrected versions of it. So, like, I saw stuff that was very plainly white and gold to me, something that was very plainly blue and black to me, and it was only after, like, sussing through some of the outer fringes of everybody yelling on Twitter that I even understood what the issue was.
Well, and that was the funny part, was to somebody like me who just looked and like, it's clearly white and gold. And it's like, you know, because you see washed out. I mean, you know, the fact that I'm constantly color correcting in studio, I know that when the lights are, you know, mercury halides or whatever, you know, it's like you get a bluish light. And so it's like, yeah, that's why the white looks so bluish in there, because it's in shadow. But
I've been trying so hard to see it as white and gold. And like,
really?
I play and, you know, I do lots of stuff with, like, you know, color bouncing hues and videography and all that sort of stuff, and look at that stuff and look, okay, I know this is what it looks like, this shade or whatever, and color tempers and all this. I cannot see it as white and gold. I cannot see it as white and gold. I've tried.
This is the weird thing, is I know, like, I'm factually demonstrably wrong. Looking at it, I still can't see it as anything but white and gold.
That's amazing to me, because like I've had like, because like for me it's like I'm like it's black and blue. I mean, my first response was, I had a girl text me in the morning. She goes, "What does this look like to you?" And it was a different photo of a woman wearing the dress, and I said a size 16. but I'm like, it's black and blue. I mean, it was like just to me. I'm like, and then she's like, really? I'm like, yeah.
Oh my God.
I mean, if it was a guy, I'd be like, well, you're colorblind. But no, yeah, girls probably see color better than we do. But it was just weird that she just, her mind was blown. And then I'm talking to other people.
I believe it was two-thirds of the audience.
Weird right now?
Huh.
Is like, I'm looking at, and the way that like Skype works, mm-hmm. is put a little window when you're not clicked on it in the corner.
Right.
And in the smaller format, the thumbnail of it, it looks like the big version of the dress to me is white and gold, but it is almost clearly blue and black in the thumbnail
where it's blended together. That's amazing.
Where I guess like the shadow is more concentrated, and now I can very much see it as blue and black.
Man, I wonder. This has to be like a gold mine to have this many respondents. Nice. To respond to it and to be able to break across gender, across region, across socioeconomic strata, like because like for whatever it is, the background visual clues. Because here's the thing, is I suspect, let's try this. I suspect if you isolated out just the dress and took out all of the, oh, it's not going to let me do that. I guess I can take some other.
Did you see the XKCD illustration, by the way?
No. Let me go to
XKCD.com right now.
Sure. XKCD.
But I mean, so everybody who's nauseated by the discussion as it's gone on for so – it's a wonderful thing, because to have as a reference point this thing, it means a lot for science, as Brian's talking about, to have millions of people respond. And then you can – now you get to go in front of an audience if you want to explain the stuff. Say, how many of you saw the gold dress or the white and gold? How many of you saw the black and blue dress? And you see this perception, and the fact it's so sharp, and it came out of nowhere. It just came out of nowhere. Is wonderful.
Yeah.
TVZ, I have a friend that was in his late 50s before he realized he was colorblind.
Wow. That's amazing. TVZgon is forwarding us over an article that mentions the claim that blue is a fairly recent invention. Is that for real?
It's been debunked.
Yeah, okay. I thought so, because I listened to like the Radiolab where they were talking about how in the Iliad it talks about the wine dark sea, and it never mentions the word blue, and therefore it's like, well, there's no such thing as blue until recently.
Yeah, no, I mean that also, you know, could be that Homer was colorblind.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, there have been a lot of different colors. Blue is always one of the hardest colors to create artificially, blue. But if you want to see blue, look at the damn sky. You know, I mean, it's. You know, and describing the sea is like, yeah, the sea is a lot of different colors, you know.
You mean the gold white sky? Great. And by the way, no, this was, this was on Saturday Night Live last night. I mean, if we are going to use that as a cultural yard marker for, everybody being in on it, this was a huge, gigantic thing. arguably bigger than the FCC ruling, which everybody thought was going to be kind of the big news of the day, wound up kind of taking a bronze medal that day between what color the dress was and llamas getting loose in Arizona.
Yeah, I didn't even see the llamas one. I guess it was kind of like a balloon boy thing where everyone was freaking out to watch them happening live, or?
It was just the fact that a news station decided to use all the resources that they would normally use for a car chase to watch two llamas run around. So equal parts spectacle and kind of adorable, and then also had a little bit of that, you know, Felix Baumgartner, like, is somebody going to run over these llamas and we'll all be horrified by it? But it all ended well.
And just for reference, like, just want to quicken the whole, the blue didn't exist. I mean, yeah, it was just hard to recreate it. Now, you look in King Tut's funeral mask, you'll find examples of blue, and you'll find lapis lazuli, other terms. There are examples. It is technically, it's a hard thing because you look in organic nature, blue occurs, but it's rare. Blue dyes didn't come about too much later.
Yeah.
So, but there was woad, other stuff. So, gentlemen.
Yo, what?
I've got a body in a morgue.
Can we poke it?
Spiro and Fudge can poke it.
I can poke it with a little Fudge. I got it right here. Poke it with the stick. Hey, Fudge, look, I'm poking a body with a stick.
Spiro, calm down.
Right. Gentlemen.
Listen, there's a body. We got to solve the case.
All right. I'm the monosyllabic coroner, and I hate my job. I'll give you a few answers. And
a monosyllabic coroner.
You're going to need – what's that?
Real chatty for a monosyllabic coroner.
It's a statement I gave at the very beginning, and I'm going to shut up.
It's actually a laminated card he just handed us we're reading this in our minds.
You get a start here, but you're going to have to take this investigation out here. I'm going to kick you out, too, because you're going to have to go into the field, too, at some point. But we're going to start with the body on the slab, the circumstances. We're more curious about the circumstances. It's not really cause of death, because I might just tell you that outright.
Okay.
I'll tell you the physical cause.
The body's intact. We're able to see facial features and everything.
Yeah.
All right. And it's male.
Yeah.
Young male, under 30.
No.
Right. Like I said, an old man, like over 50.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what? You have some Fudge.
What color is he? Blue and black, white and gold.
Oh, you got the stare from the coroner. Oh, the Fudge pissed off the coroner.
Pissed is two words, so he can't say it.
I don't know how to phrase this, but
in the most offensive way possible.
You've seen him naked, right?
Yeah.
Do you see any holes in him? Like, obvious, like, you know, holes?
Yeah, several.
Okay, all right.
Gunshots?
No.
Hmm.
Pitchforks?
No.
Nostrils,
mouth.
Oh, ears. Yeah, right. Any holes that weren't there before he died?
No.
Okay. What about, was he found out in the open, or was he found in his home?
No.
Was he within 10 miles or 20 miles of home?
Maybe.
Okay. All right. So in his local town.
To the morgue.
Oh, say it again, Justin.
How many hours ago was he brought to the morgue?
5.
All right. So we got a fresh one. Was the body discovered by someone was the body discovered within, say, 6 hours of its death?
Yeah.
Okay. So was the person there at the time of death?
The deceased?
No. The person who discovered the body. Were there witnesses? Were there witnesses to the death?
Yes.
Okay. Was it more than 5 witnesses?
Maybe.
Okay.
Where did he die?
Lake.
Was he attacked?
Was he on a boat?
Yes.
Was he attacked by a wild animal?
Maybe.
Is he wearing gold lame and have awesome Doug Henning hair?
Stupid.
All right, coroner. At what time specifically did the giant river snake leap from the river and kill this man?
Huh.
Nope, snakes.
Nice try. Nice try.
Here, come on. This is like 9 of our cases have been snakes.
Is it look, I mean, by the numbers, I think it's a great algorithm you got going. Good heuristic.
With snake?
Yeah. Was his death unusual? Why am I even asking that? Was it supernatural? Is it solved? That's what I want to know. Do they know what killed him?
Heart attack.
It was a heart attack? But he's got...
Why are we brought in? So he's out there on a boat. All of a sudden he has a heart attack and dies, gets brought right to the morgue. What the hell do they need 2 world-class detectives or 1 world-class detective and his bizarre sidekick to solve it for?
Cause.
Oh, the cause of death or just because? I just gave you the same question. God dang it.
Did he have a history of heart ailments?
No, barely.
Was he alone in the boat?
No.
Was okay, so we know
go talk to the other person in the boat.
Yeah, can we leave? I think we're just gonna leave this guy. He was found heart attack.
Bye.
See ya, Montesilla. Man, I sure hope that when we go to investigate the people who are on the boat, that they're not also curmudgeons who are very monosyllabic in their answers.
Or at least after they go on a monologue for like 30 minutes and then only say 5 words afterward. Bizarre.
I was setting the scene, gentlemen.
Just saying.
All right, so let's go. We go and we find the person that was on the boat with him.
I'm the boat captain. What's going on?
Did he rent your boat? Did you? He like charter it?
Maybe.
Okay.
What, is it everybody in this town with the monosyllabic stuff? Come on.
We're related.
Yeah, no, they're all part of the big family.
it was a group of people. It was a charter. Had a bunch of people on my boat.
Brother.
And were you guys just out for fun, or were you looking for something?
Yeah.
Were you fishing?
Maybe throwing cats and some line and stuff, you know.
You already asked this. Was it just you two?
No, there's a few other people on the boat. And like a family. His family was on the boat.
His family was on the boat.
How long were you guys out for?
A few hours. This is a bit of a trip.
A bit of a day trip.
So what was this guy doing right before he had the heart attack?
Just sitting there.
Nothing else?
Nope.
Did it appear that he was infested with parasites? And then did he lean back and sort of scream, "Oh God, it's happening!" And then like worms crawled out of his eyes and consumed his flesh.
We didn't notice at first what happened. We're a bit distracted.
You know, I just took a real quick nap on the floor of the boat.
No, it doesn't sound like he fell down at all. Yeah, did he look like he was alive for a long time after he died?
We weren't sure until we got in the hospital and realized he was dead.
Was he moving?
Not when he was dead. They don't tend to move when they're dead. Okay, you should talk to my brother.
I'm just wondering why.
He'll tell you that. Yeah.
This seems like a real fishy situation, no pun intended, since you're on a boat. What were you guys on the hunt for?
You know, there are a lot of sights to see around here, you know, a lot of historical things.
Were you guys doing anything illegal?
No. We just, it's a lot of historical things to see and stuff. A lot of history here, so.
A lot of history? What kind of?
Huh? It's a balloons?
Wait, this is a lake? Wait, where are we? What part of the, point on the map where we are?
We're in Europe.
Wait a minute, are we in Loch Ness?
Not right at this moment, or not, but maybe the boat was at Loch Ness.
You're in Loch Ness, and you're looking for the Loch Ness monster, aren't you?
Come on.
There are other things to see there, too. We do tours, and it's not just go see the Loch Ness monster, you know?
Come on, dude.
See.
Why does your business card say, come see the Loch Ness monster? or your money back?
I mean, I'll offer the money back. Gotta read the fine print, you know.
So, okay, all right. So they show up. Is this guy an American? He was a tourist. He decided to take the family. They just wanted to go see the beautiful Loch Ness with its coffee-colored waters, hoping to spot themselves a giant, diplodocus or whatever it is that's in the water. And all I could think of is Aphex's Tree Fitty comment in the chat where he's from South Park. What's that? Whatever. And so what? He dies in the boat. From what?
He was scared.
Wait, he had a heart attack because
he thinks he saw the Loch Ness Monster, had a heart attack, and died.
Well, in his defense, when we hit it, it was pretty traumatic.
When you hit the Loch Ness Monster, and you hit with the boat the Loch Ness Monster like it was a poor manatee.
And you what? You shouted, "Holy crap, we hit Loch Ness, we killed Nessie," and the trauma gave him a heart attack?
Listen, we don't know when he had the heart attack. All we know is we hit it and we had to pull into port, and we look at the boat and we realize he's dead, and I look at the damage of the boat and there's all this flesh attached to the propeller in the boat. And, we found flesh and black skin an inch thick along the prop shaft.
Well, wow. Okay. I mean, have you tested the flesh to figure out what it belonged to? Did you kill Nessie?
The workers threw it away.
The flesh wasn't white gold.
The dock workers threw it away. I was upset, because obviously that was the proof of Nessie.
Hold on. So you had black flesh. You hit something. You come back. Your boat's broken on some level because of the impact. Next thing you know, the dock workers are throwing the flesh away into the garbage bin?
Well, we had an old dead guy in our boat who was traumatized by what happened.
Are you going to throw him away next? What is it with you people?
This is from the Scotland Now Daily Record. And this happened 40 years ago. The guy says he's taking some people out on the boat, and they hit something. They had a collision with something. And the grandfather had a heart attack, and they took him to the hospital and realized he died. They get the boat to examine the boat, and he finds flesh. And there's supposed to be numerous encounters with Loch Ness Monster, people colliding with it. And this guy said, yeah, we actually had bits of Loch Ness Monster flesh, which sounds a lot like seal flesh, just saying. But
are there seals? I assume there are seals in Loch Ness, right?
Yeah.
Seals.
I think so.
Loch Ness searching. Look at this, man. We got images of seals in Loch Ness,
mm-hmm.
right there.
Wow, they look kind of like the famous Loch Ness Monster,
right?
Shockingly.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, so it sounds to me like they ran over a seal. I'm just saying. But, the way the story gets told is, somebody was so scared and traumatized by what happened, they had a heart attack right then and there.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I wonder how much of the oh my gosh, I've never seen this breakdown of. I remember that famous image of Nessie that the guy on his deathbed confessed to.
It's surgeon's photo.
Yeah. Oh, because it's rumored like that it's supposed to be just a toy sub, but I'm looking at this right now. But it looks like somebody's envisioning an entire
Nazi U-boat.
Yeah, like with people down below at scale. That's amazing.
That was like that Sherlock Holmes movie where they the Germans were like secretly building a submarine for the Loch Ness because it was such a strategic thing.
Yeah.
That looks like a surgeon's photo. A surgeon's photo.
Above reproach, that surgeon. You're calling him a liar?
Yeah, let's go ahead and bring up Dr. Jakes' photo and say surgeon's photo.
That was a long way to get around to what I thought was a very interesting, unusual Loch Ness Monster story involving Loch Ness Monster flesh.
Well, here was my question.
Unless he's killed.
How big? Oh, man. Now we have to avenge. We have to destroy this beast. This a murderous beast.
Let's kill what we don't understand.
Sounds legit.
I say we send Dr. Jack, Jakes, and Al.
I say we drop a nuke in Loch Ness just because that'd be cool to watch explode.
Yeah.
It's very aggressive, Brian.
Do you want to do picks? Do you have time for one more?
No, I got time.
All right. I want to show you something. I want to show you something, gentlemen. The world we live in is very, very strange. I got to pull up the link to this image. I don't want to panic you guys, but I think the sky is falling.
Wait, well, I mean, stuff falls from the sky all the time. If insofar as you define the sky as everything above the earth, then yeah, it's falling towards us all the time.
Brian, that's this crazy talk. Point is, I'm going to show you an image here, Brian.
Yep. Oh, here it comes.
All right. No, the shocking reversal of the cam from Andrew. He is now pointing it to his computer, and what we see is a streak, a comet-like streak in the night sky, maybe a dusk kind of sky, and it is certainly pink in nature.
It looks like the Red Comet from the Game of Thrones series until that was utterly forgotten as a portent.
Yeah, that was, right?
Yeah, they sort of just dropped it. They were like, there's definitely a Red Comet in the sky, and then they're like, whatever.
Well, this is no comet, gentlemen. Giant red blob in the sky.
Oh, wait, so it's a whole blob. So that wasn't just that it was out of focus, because it did look like something was mid-streak and had a trail behind it.
It was a glow, a red glow.
Okay, now you've already removed the picture, so I'm going by memory, but I seem to remember it was in the very end of dusk, right?
Yeah, it may have been dusk-like or sometime at dusk or some nighttime or
maybe,
whatever.
Or maybe morning or...
This kind of stuff happens all the time with discolorations in the sky, although normally it's far more uniform. You know, out here, I think I've woken up to or had at dusk, you know, very pink or orangey, unnatural-looking skies.
Well, if I was going to guess, this is like right before the sun, you know, in dusk, after the sun is down and you kind of feel like it should be night, you can get, especially if it's largely a cloudless sky, and then you have one cloud that's just in that right position, it just looked like it's just randomly on fire, or even like if it's a little piece of a cloud, it'll look like a little UFO or something. Is that what this is?
No, Brian. It's not what it is.
In a train from space?
This was like, you looked up, you saw this reddish glow, this weird reddish glow in the sky.
And it wasn't obviously a cloud. And it must have been a local phenomenon, or we would have heard about it across the planet, right?
Yeah. It was relatively local.
So is it a meteor? But you said it wasn't a meteor.
No, it was still in the sky. Where was this local to?
This was let me pull this up. Let me see where this one, New Mexico. I think this photo was from New Mexico, southern New Mexico. This photo was taken from Mesa, Arizona.
Huh. So it's big. Wait. Could it have been? Well, no, we don't do nuclear testing anymore, so it couldn't be. I mean, could it be munitions of some variety? Electric charging, some whatever?
Could it be clarify a question for me, Brian?
I don't know. Like some kind of weapons testing thing. You know,
not a weapons test that we know of.
So this is a solved mystery of the hanging red cloud, right?
Yeah, it is.
Can I see it again? It looks like it was.
I'm sending you the article, and you'll actually get the explanation for it.
Okay, here we go.
So this is really cool. So imagine you're out there, and you see this weird, mysterious red glow, and you're like, "What the hell is that?" And the funny part is there's not a lot of coverage of it, and so I could see, and like even trying to go to the source of it, it leads to a Facebook page without a lot of information there.
Wow. One day after a Chinese rocket disintegrated brightly over the western USA, another set of strange lights appeared over the same region. This time it was NASA's doing. Before sunrise on February 25th, a Terrier Black Brant Research rocket lifted up from White Sands Missile Range in southern New Mexico, carrying an experiment to Earth's ionosphere. Vapors released by the rocket created a luminous blob in the dawn sky, shown here. That's
Wait,
amazing.
That's like – that's NASA's graffiti? Tagging the sky?
Yeah. That's astonishing. It looks, there's different photos of it, but
see it all the way in Utah, apparently.
Wow. And so this is all, I guess, essentially, you know, in the ionosphere is where the northern lights are, right? Because normally it gets excited by solar radiation and you get aurora. So this is kind of like an aurora?
Dude, I'll tell you what, Max Ammo's got it. Up your nose, Banksy. Like, this is some next level stuff.
It was, they say the total amount of material they used, the ionized gas, would fit in a propane tank that, you know, used for a barbecue grill.
Wow.
Just that much, and it creates that big of a glow.
And this is not a reflection. It's an actual glow. That's huge.
Yeah, it's actual glow. Actual glow. Actually, it's a plasma. It's like one of those little glow globes.
So, all right, let's imagine a world where, because SpaceX has revolutionized rocket technology, it's now very cheap. Could you see, like, a world in which people are augmenting the sky that shines over their city or town or state?
Well, there was talk about, I want to say that France was talking smack. I remember I was in seventh grade at the time reading, you know, some like 321 Contact magazine, and there was talking about, like, in celebration of some 100th or 200th anniversary of being French as hell, France was going to...
3, 2, 1... Contact is the moment. Yeah. Everything comes together. Sorry.
Yeah. Now we're going to sing the Bloodhound Gang.
But dude, I was about to look up the Bloodhound Gang.
Whenever there's trouble, we're there on the double. So there was talk about them sending up, just like for a while, just to have something, you know, to be all like, hey, look at what we can do. They were going to fling up and inflate a ring, an inflatable ring that would be as bright as the full moon, hanging up there in front of the world, because it was going to be so much closer to the Earth, and it wouldn't take a lot of mass because they were just going to inflate it and to become like just a giant ring thing. I mean, I would love to see. Let me look this up and see if that's crazy talk.
Like, all right, so number one, you would have to take something universally pleasing to even be a conversation if you were to have some sort of, you know, for like maybe 4th of July. You know, you put up a little American flag in the sky or something like
that. Well, oh, yeah, to show the United States' global domination over the entire planet. That will be universally pleasing.
This was regional to Arizona as far as Utah, right?
Right. Oh, so you're saying like to do like a firework that dissipates. You're not saying send up an actual thing that the whole universe can see.
Not to do a big American flag that all the world can see.
That's what I thought you were saying.
No. I'm just saying that. All right. So let's say rocket stuff is cheaper, you know, and this is like this would be the next level of maybe a fireworks display.
Oh, man, dude, that's delightful that you think that people are going to spend, you know, thousands of dollars to send up just a firework display. Personally, this has ads written all over it.
Well, I think like if China were to host the Olympics again, they'd do it. You know, the next big Olympic sort of thing. I see that happening.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is if it's worth doing it there, then it's worth – it's skywriting, like ultimate skywriting, yeah. Seen by an entire country.
Yeah, the biggest thing is if you're interfering with like telescopes and any sort of scientific thing or anything like that, and you're doing that, your brand will get so criticized, so yelled at. You know, I mean, GoDaddy will do it, but I'm not saying nobody will do it. I'm just saying
this is something. There is a permanence to launching a rocket to do something that maybe even just in the short term, I think affects our understanding of whether or not it's a cool thing to do, unless it's kind of a purely altruistic purpose, you know? Like, I feel like skywriting has an impermanence to it that even if you're annoyed by it, by the time that you would go to the, you know, the police to call, you know, like, get this, it's terrible, it's already gone, you know?
Well, I mean, it sounds like that's the case for this. It didn't stick around for more than a couple of hours.
Yeah.
Unless
I understand. I think if you could figure out a way to do it, and it's temporary, and, you know, I think absolutely. Gentlemen?
You want to do picks?
Let's do picks. Who wants to go first to picks?
I got one ready, if that's the question. Wait, except for I totally don't. I'm going to have to read it off my phone. I keep doing more of the great courses on Audible. You know, one of the things that I remember that the great courses used to be like, you know, $100 a piece, and they'd come on, cassette tapes, and there was all this infrastructure or whatever. Like, I don't know what kind of Satan's bargain they did with Audible, but I love the fact that they're just one Audible credit. The one I'm doing right now is 24 segments long. So it's a big one. Each segment's about a half hour long. Hosted and I assume written by Professor Stephen Novella. You ever hear of him?
Yep.
Host, among others, of the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe podcast. He did a fantastic, great course called Your Deceptive Mind, A Scientific Guide to Critical Thinking Skills. And I don't know if you know this, Andrew, but folks like the three of us, we've been around a bit for in the skeptic circles, and we've learned a lot about the ways the brain can fool itself. So in many ways, this is sort of a greatest hits of, you know, so much of it is material that I've read over the last 4 or 5 years or beyond, but it's awesome to get a refresher on it. For example, you know, all of Thinking Fast and Slow will show up in basically a 20-minute segment, you know, give or take. And so I'm like, oh, that's right. They did do that test. And you can manufacture this. And, oh, I do know that illusion. It really does cause you to think that. No, yeah, no, I do have that, you know, I do remember learning about that cognitive bias. You know, he talks about everything from, you know, the Barnum effect to, it's fantastic. I'm really, as far as the greatest hits of not being judgmental about what is and isn't possible in, the supernatural or what is and isn't pseudoscience, but so much as explaining why the brain insists on categorizing things, you know, much like I'm sure if this were to come out, you know, tomorrow, it would involve the white, gold, blue, black dress illusion in there, but I'm enjoying it quite a bit.
Very cool.
I try to finish a book before I recommend it, but I'm almost like I'm like 10 pages away from finishing this book, so I'm gonna go ahead and recommend it. And I'm gonna give you a little background though before I get into the specifics of this. Often, you know, we live in a very, very interesting time where you have people who've gone from commenting on things evolving, technology, et cetera, and then participating in it. And it used to be kind of like, you know, if you're a writer, you're going to be a writer. You know, if you're going to be this, this is sort of what you did. You look for things sort of around that area and your expertise. Maybe if you were a covered politics, you knew a lot about, you were a good writer and you could cover it. Maybe you might become a speech writer. You know, maybe you might become maybe a lobbyist or something like that. Your movements laterally within an area, but there weren't a lot of them that you could do. There's a writer who I've read some of his books before, and he's a magazine writer, editor, and who's written a lot about technology. And as he's covered this more and more, he's built up a pretty good knowledge base and then put some of these that went from analyzing other people's ideas to starting to put his own ideas into play. And I'm talking about Chris Anderson, whose book I mentioned last week, Free, a really good book where he talked about, you know, the whole idea of the free economy and, you know, a good insight into it. And he also wrote for The Long Tail, et cetera. His newest book right there, Makers, which came out a year ago. Makers is all about the new industrial revolution, about how people are able to build things, you know, on their own, build things smaller groups, and talks about everything from Local Motors, which is this company, you know, a car company where you participate in building a car and they design their own custom car machines, to, you know, the people behind Square, how Jack Dorsey and his partner there, you know, built the own little the Square device that then powered, made it easy to turn your iPhone into a credit card terminal. A bunch of different stories talking about people launching stuff on Kickstarter. Back then, Pebble had just launched, as he wrote this, they hadn't delivered a product yet, so he talks about that. He also talks about his own company, his own experience, where he started creating drones, like these different kinds of drones, and started an open source drone project where people could contribute designs to it, and then eventually they decided they would start manufacturing them. He brought somebody on board to help him out with this. And so if you read this guy's books, he went from a writer talking about this interesting thing going on and experimenting, like in the book Free, making it free, to then creating his own open source hardware company, RoboDrone, which just now got a $50 million investment. Wow. From investors looking to expand. He's got over 200 employees, and this is the guy that was the, I think, and maybe he still is, he's a, you know, the writer for
Wired Magazine,
editor in chief of Wired in 2012.
I'm trying to, you know what, I have to I'm distracted because I'm literally trying to spend Audible credits on this right this second, but yeah. I realized.
And it's interesting because he talks about he gets into the idea that he started this. He started 3D robotics. Started this company to start producing. Developing, go to 3drobotics.com to create their own sort of. Well, he and his kids were playing around with Legos one day, and the kids got bored with Legos, and then they had a remote control airplane, which didn't fly very well. But then he was thinking about trying to combine like the Mindstorm sort of things with the plane and try to create its own autopilot. And that evolved, and other people liked this idea, and they started contributing. And the next thing you know, he has a large group of people helping develop this hardware. He starts to manufacture, and he wants to manufacture, and he gets some great suggestions from some person he's never met. Says this person's great, ends up partnering this person, and this person ends up becoming the CEO of his company or running the factories or, you know, becoming the head of the company. The person he started collaborating with was a 19-year-old Mexican immigrant living in Riverside, California with his mother, you know, and his, like, girlfriend. He just got pregnant.
Okay? Wow.
And Anderson partnered them because he had the knowledge. Not didn't matter degrees, didn't matter background, because this kid had the knowledge. And now that's Jordy Munoz, you know, is – running this with him because they formed a group online and started collaborating. And it's just an amazing story about how I think that's the best part about the book is you realize now that, that 3D robotics has become a very viable, powerful company. And it's Chris Anderson putting his ideas to the test, not just writing about, hey, I think this is kind of cool or this is an interesting sort of thing that's going on. He's the guy that once he found his passion, because he just – the thing he would love to do for free, the thing he loved to do every day, which is play around with drones and robots and stuff like that, and then participate in online movements, he was able to create an amazing company that's got offices in Austin, Tijuana, Berkeley, San Diego.
I'll tell you what, man, that thing you said about him not having any idea that the kid was 19 years old or any of that, like all he cared about is the kid knew his stuff. And that's one of the wonderful things that the internet brings us is this curtain. Whereas, you know, pre-internet, I mean, it's how ridiculous does it seem to interview people one at a time and make a gamble based on some paperwork that they have that they're probably somebody who knows their stuff. Nowadays, you know, we just hosted a contest on 99designs.com. For an upcoming project on scam stuff. And I don't know the nationality. I don't know the age. I don't know the gender. I don't know anything about the winning entry except for that I loved it and that they're going to continue to that they won the purse and now we're going to pay them more to design the rest of the project. And it's like it's amazing how efficient it makes all that possible.
It's great. And Chris Anderson went from literally his kitchen table with his kids to now and as Qualcomm put in $50 million investment into the company was already and they went he talked about the evolution of going from like how do you go from you know small assembly to large assembly. It is a if you have any interest in one making things, inventing things, anything like that, I highly, highly, highly recommend this book. And it's the best testament to it is where you look at Anderson's passion, following him, like you know, listen to him talk about 3D robotics and other companies and this oh the side thing he's doing. It's like what a flight of whimsy, Anderson. Guess what? Now it's a real big thing and he's head of a very big robotics company.
Absolutely.
A journalist of all
people.
All right, my pick is the Daily Tech News Show, which you might have heard with Tom Merritt. It's a great show every day that you can listen to it. However, I do believe that he is very much in his element and is very important for issues like the net neutrality thing that happened this week. It's really a kind of sober look at these like very, very important issues beyond just sort of people, you know, posting GIFs either in anger or in delight about it. So I was thankfully a part of the episode after they made the announcement. I was very excited to do it, but I think that it is a great daily listen.
Cool.
Right on. Cool.
A sober look. Was that a slam against Brian?
Probably. Wait, no, I don't know. To be clear, it's like, in fact, full disclosure, Tom has asked me, the only reason that he didn't get into more detail is because the FCC hasn't actually released all the net neutrality stuff.
Oh,
Yeah, and he called me and he's like, hey, how short of notice do you need to come on Daily Tech News Show when this comes out? And I was like, an hour. So at some point, whenever they release it, you know, he asked me, you know, because obviously we talk about a lot of this on Cord Killers, and I seem to have made a name for myself for the one guy. I don't know, obviously not the one guy, but whatever. I will probably be less thrilled with the FCC ruling than the rest of the world is what I'm saying.
Well, Brian, that's because you're not acting purely on emotion.
Well, that was the biggest thing, and this it's what I think he does on that show very, very well, is that it's – I think there is nobody that is served for, you know, everybody screaming yub nub and jumping up and down for something that we have no idea what it is, you know. And there's a lot that goes into it. And you know, I think that if for anybody who watched the actual FCC discussion of it, I don't think that there were really, for however disingenuous you might find the positions of Verizon or Comcast, and believe you me, I have very strong feelings about how they have brought a lot of this upon themselves. But there are, you know, there are some real issues here that I think, you know, deserve to be explored. And I think Daily Tech News Show is a great format. Mm-hmm. To do that beyond just the hyperbole of like, we won, when we don't really know who we are and what we've won and what the debate really is.
Well, can I tell you, you made a Chris Rock reference about that. And I have an Amazon Echo, by the way. And randomly that Chris Rock segment came up, and out of nowhere, I was listening to music. All of a sudden, this Chris Rock, you know, what did we win thing came up. I'm like, this is funny.
The Chris Rock, and I think it's the Bring the Pain special, talking about black people during the OJ thing. Like, one, like, what the F did we win? I didn't get an OJ check in the mail.
and sneak preview of the kind of thing I'm going to talk about on Daily Tech News shows. There's an FCC chart that where the FCC summarizes internet access from 2009 to 2012. And it's like, the reason everyone wants net neutrality is because we just don't want our crap to be slow or choked or whatever. But we're entering a world where you could see this geometric progression of low bandwidth cellular connections going down, 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 high bandwidth going up, up, up. And it's just... it's connected America. I don't know. We live in a world where everything is trending to free in terms of bandwidth, in terms of storage, and in terms of computing power. And soon with the 3D revolution, with, you know, it's just so much. Why lock into stone now, after this was relevant?
We all want the same thing. I think our hesitation comes from our experience in seeing how plans put in place to give us those things end up giving us the opposite. And that's the fear, is that yes, this yes, want. Historically,
yeah,
it doesn't work
out. Well, and plus also they tend to squeeze out the smaller guy. It tends to to chill young, starry-eyed entrepreneurs from diving into it, because you know who can play the regulation game? You know how to work, you know, not so much bribes but lobbying efforts, are the entrenched, big, rich variety. The exact people you hate are now going to be in a better position to play the inside Washington game, and it's going to be harder for outsiders to come in and break that. So,
well, yeah, there's a reason there's only been three American car companies in the last 50 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gentlemen, I think we're ready to wrap this up and move into After Things.
Yeah. So how's it been?
It's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.